And welcome to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Today we're going to be talking about holiday things. Why not? We're in the middle of Christmas and New Year's, and this is really one of the best times of year. But honestly, for your dogs, for your pets, sometimes it's really not the greatest thing. And the reason that is, a lot of things happen during the holiday times that don't happen the rest of the year. For instance, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, sometimes there are fireworks. There are foods that are out there that these pups and kittens are not really used to. And we're going to talk about something also that's a little bit interesting, and that's going to also be about medications and other things you might be imbibing on or enjoying during this time. So we're going to start out with actually a tie-in from a question that's going to be later on, which is, what do you do to choose that type of dog, to know what kind of dog you should have, what kind of pet is even appropriate for your family? Normally, of course, as a behaviorist, I get the afters. I don't often, although I do sometimes, get the befores. And so what happens is you'll have somebody who decides they want a pet, and they look and they judge with their eyes, and they look and they go, oh, this thing is so cute. What an adorable animal. What an adorable kitten. What an adorable puppy. But you really don't know about them. And just like you would have with purchasing anything or adopting anything, you really don't know all there is to know. But what's great about it is there are wonderful resources out there. So if you're looking and you say, okay, I'm going to get a dog and I have a family and I'm going to get an Aussie doodle or something like that. Well, you have to look at things as why are they and what are they and how are they going to behave? So let's say an Australian Shepherd. They can be great dogs if you're going to lead an active lifestyle. If you maybe are, you know, going to be living in a bigger area with a lot of things going on, like a farm or something, where the dog would eventually have a job to do. Aussies are also very, very smart, so you better be smarter than they are, and you better be ready for when they start going through puppy phases, because they're not necessarily going to be the easiest of all. They may be like you were when you were a teenager, so just think of that for a moment. So how do you know what kind of dog or puppy to choose? A lot of times what I see is that people actually choose wrong because they choose with their eyes. Now, choosing with your eyes is a great idea if you can read ingredients on an ingredient paddle. But if you're choosing with your eyes and not your brain, you're going to get in trouble. So what do I mean by that? Everybody loves a cute, fluffy little puppy, okay? I mean, you see a little puppy with a little puppy fur, whether it's a lab or a golden, whether it's a poodle or a sheepdog, they're all adorable. Let's face it, like little kids, even more so, puppies are cute. But remember that puppy is going to grow up. And what reminds me of this is the lady who called up to relinquish her Great Dane, who was about 7 or 8 months old, to a shelter and called me to see if I could use the pup. And she said to me, I just didn't realize it was going to get quite this big. And I said to her, ma'am, it's called a Great Dane, not a tiny Dane. Did you ever see an adult? She said, no, I saw it in a pet store, and I wanted a dog like Marmaduke. I wanted a big dog. But I didn't realize it was going to get this big, and I just can't afford the food. I don't have the time to be able to take care of the dog, so I'm going to give it up. And I'm going to get something smaller. First thing I said was, well, maybe it would be a good idea for you first to foster a dog because, you know, not every dog ends up the size you want. And that's where I'm getting into people who are buying the mixed breed designer dogs because they're not a breed. So there was a very nice couple, and the gentleman had called because he had a golden poodle something mix, and he spent a lot of money. I think it was like $4,000 for a mutt. And he was a very nice man. And he didn't want the dog, because this one was 80 pounds. So he didn't want one that was going to be that big again, because he had been promised that the dog was going to only wind up at being about 50 pounds. So he said, and his wife, I think, was actually the culprit here, well, guess what? Look, they have minis. Why don't we just get a mini of it? Because then we can get another hyper dog, but we love it. Well, it's hyper, make sure you know what you're doing. But we can get a mini of it, and it's guaranteed to only be about 30 pounds. That will be perfect. So they get the second puppy. Puppy's growing, kind of like something outside a nuclear facility when there's a lot of radiation leakage. The puppy ended up being 110 pounds. That's when the man called me. He said, I don't understand. It's a mini. It's supposed to be a lot smaller than the standard. Well, I just laughed my rear end off because I was like, there's no such thing as mini and standard. The genetics are such that it's like you can be 5'3" and your spouse can be 5'5" and you can have a 6-foot-tall kid because if both of your families have tall genetics, it's just the way the genetics combine, the way the DNA combines. So this guy has an 80-pound out-of-control doodle of some sort and a 110-pound out-of-control doodle of some sort. And now here I come. So the two dogs were bouncing off each other. He said, I wish I knew and had spoken to you before I got the first one. And I said, well, certainly. But the issue was then, okay, they were good. They loved the dog. But they had 190 pounds worth of dogs. They wanted one small to mid-sized dog, 30-pound dog, 40 pounds maybe. So the problem is when you buy a dog and it's a certain size that you're promised, right? Your quote-unquote breeder isn't really a breeder at all. They're just breeding to make money, right? There's no breed that they're going to be showing the dog and living up to some standard or some size or shape or even temperament or health. So you don't know. So if you're looking to get a certain size dog, you're best off rescuing. I mean, there are a lot of reasons to rescue, but this is one of them. If you can rescue a dog who's a year old already, 2 years old, yes, you don't go through the puppy phase. But yes, guess what? You don't go through the puppy phase. You don't have to take that dog and housebreak it and crate train it and teach it not to, you know, jump all over and not to pee and poop all over and not to bite everybody. So there's something wonderful about rescues. And yes, they have mixed breed rescues and even some of the good all breed rescues, and there are quite a few out there, will be able to help you and will be able to kind of tell you how this dog or what this dog may be, how it may act, and all those things. So again, like we've talked about in the past, and I talk about on wyattslist.com, wyattslist.com, is rescue and get something that's a little older, that's already grown up, because you're not going to have to go through all those phases, and you're going to learn exactly what that animal is, what he does, what he loves, how he's going to behave in the future, and that's so important. So it is important to look at, if you are going to insist on getting some kind of a mixed breed designer dog, puppy, and that's fine, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But think about this. If I ask 100 people, how big is an average German Shepherd? They're going to tell me, right? And they're going to get it right. How big is an average Chihuahua? They're going to tell me, and they're going to get it right. How big is an average, let's say, Rhodesian Ridgeback? They're going to tell me, and they're probably going to get it right if they know what they are. Any breed that you come up with, people will say, oh, they'll be about 60 to 80 pounds. They'll be 90 to 100 pounds. They'll be 20 to 25 pounds. How big is a Maltese? They're definitely going to be less than 10 pounds, probably significantly less. So that's where the whole dilemma comes in. When you start mixing breeds of animals, you don't know because the genetics behind it doesn't say, oh, yes, okay, this person who's purchasing this puppy would like a 30-pound puppy. Okay, DNA, boop, 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 it goes into a computer and kicks out a punch card that says, yes, this particular puppy is going to be 30 pounds. This is the issue when you buy something that is not a purebred dog. because the DNA behind it, you don't know. You don't know if it's going to be complete dominance, which means it's you breed of tiny to large, and you're going to get either tiny or large, or incomplete dominance, which means if you breed tiny and large, you can get tiny, you can get large, you can get anything in between. And that's important to be, you know, really keep in mind. Bear that in mind when you are looking to get a dog. Because if you go to a purebred dog breeder who is an AKC show breeder of merit like I am, who handles these dogs and is, you know, is in it for the long haul, somebody who's looking at it as a breeder, as a legitimate, reputable breeder, not to just make money. Because if you do breed dogs right, and you're in showing and everything else, you can easily go through thousands of dollars, $3,000, $4,000 in a month showing the dog until it gets into its championship. But you're also going to be running tests, all kinds of hip tests. So they have Penn Hip. They also have OFA, or Orthopedic Foundation for Animals, OFA tests before you buy that puppy. If your breeder is a reputable breeder, they're going to test for hips, elbows, thyroid, make sure it's all healthy and normal. Maybe things like von Willebrand's disease, if it's like a Rottweiler or a certain breed that have a bleeding disorder, they can test their eyes and their heart, Behring's circ, they can test all kinds of things. And now the great thing is you can actually get the DNA testing, the two largest ones that are out there will both test and let you know what's in that dog and what kind of genetic blips or issues that dog is either possessing or prone to having, which is great. So, no, you can't DNA test the puppy and do x-rays on the hips, elbows, and all those things, patellas, whatever they need when they're young. But if your breeder, whether it's a purebred breeder, which if it's a good one, they will, or your mixed breed dog breeder, which good luck on that, finding one that does, there are a few. If you find one, that's one to stick with, because at least you know that they care about that dog. They care that that dog is going to be what they're telling you and it's going to be healthy. But now you can test for almost 200. Some of them are over that, different genetic conditions and predispositions to things. So that's great, because then at least you know. And forearmed is forewarned, right? And forewarned is forearmed, meaning if you have 20/20 hindsight, if you know ahead of time, if you're forewarned, you are forearmed. You're then armed with that knowledge. So if you have a choice, and right now I'm actually going through this with one of my people who's going to be training. We're going to be training a service dog for her son. We're going through this now, and we see great advertising and these quote-unquote breeders who, yes, we have this dog. It's $3,500. It's $4,000. I'm talking mixed breed dogs here. And we can't get people to call us back. When we do get somebody to call us back, and she mentions that, you know, that she is working with a top behaviorist who's trained, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dogs and had done behavioral work for 40-plus years, they all of a sudden don't want to sell her a dog. You know why? Because they know that they don't have a good quality dog. They know they're absolutely going to be at a loss on the phone. They're not going to know how to answer, and they don't want to deal with it. So a great thing to do, even if you're kind of maybe not embellishing, but mention, well, would you mind talking to my trainer, my behaviors? Would you mind talking to my friend who's been breeding Grand Champion Show Dogs, because she knows what's going on. She knows. And you'll see, just by saying that, a lot of these people will not want to deal with you. And that's a good thing. Better to not get stuck with something than to, you know, to try to go all the way through and, you know, whole hog forward. And then you find out that you got something bad. So it's definitely better to save the heartache and save the heartbreak by making sure that they're interested in doing the right thing genetically and checking all the genetic tests that you can and doing x-rays and all that, and also guaranteeing. So that's a big thing. A lot of places will guarantee, and they'll say, oh yeah, if there, anything happens to the puppy, anything happens to the dog is guaranteed for the first, you know, month or first week, or some of them will even say a couple of years. You have to ask them, now what happens if I get a puppy from you and now my kids and my family all get attached to this puppy and we find out a year and a half later that the dog has a congenital issue and that the dog is not going to live a long time or is going to need excessive medical. What do you cover? And they'll say, oh, no, we'll give you an exchange puppy. You give us back that one, we'll give you a new one. First thing is, if you didn't stand behind the first one, I probably don't want your second one. And second of all is you're going to deal with somebody who wants you to give up an animal you've had for weeks, months, or even years, and they're going to just give you a replacement puppy? No. You want somebody who says, listen, I trust my line. If you have a problem, you can keep that puppy, and I'll give you another one, or I'll credit you money or something like that. You don't want somebody who's going to give you another guaranteed problem when the first one was an issue. So think about that when you consider different breeders or quote-unquote breeders. What did they say? And also the other thing is, if they're difficult to get in touch with now when they want your money, how hard is it going to be to get in touch with them later when they've already got your money? So again, think about it before it happens, and hopefully we can avoid it. So next thing I want to talk about is, here we are, almost at New Year's. Well, New Year's is a great time because we spend time with family and friends, pop champagne, fireworks, depending on where you are, a lot of noise, a lot of screaming, you know, watching the ball drop at Times Square or the one in, you know, in England or in Australia, whoever hits the, you know, first, and we watch all that, and it's such a joy. But remember, dogs and cats do not do well, many of them, with all these stresses. So once everybody comes to your house, have everyone over. If your dog is good, have them, you know, play with the dog, pet the dog, whatever. But when you start getting close to that where the ball's dropping and you know there are going to be fireworks, it's always a great idea, if you have a dog that has any issues, to let him take a little break, let him go if he enjoys being in the crate or in a back bedroom or your basement, if that's the area you hang out, because you want to make sure that the dog doesn't get stressed. Fireworks are not great for anybody. And I would say, honestly, I get more, as a behaviorist, more calls right after New Year's and Christmas than any other time of the year, because people get drunk. People don't think. They get stumbly. They fall. They land on the dog. They do stupid things, sticking their face near the dog's face. They try to grab the dog, pick the dog up, whatever it is. And dogs don't like that. Same thing with cats. A lot of animals do not like being picked up and, you know, having everybody in their face. So if your dog is that kind of dog that wants to be around everyone, but you don't know how it's going to react, then why don't you set the dog up for success? Don't set him up to fail. Set him up for success. Let your dog, you know, hang out with everybody. And when you start getting close, you know, 11 o'clock, 11:30, whatever, start, you know, thinking about letting the dog go to bed a little earlier, put the music or radio on in his room so that he knows that everything's okay, everything's all good, no worries, no issues. And then when you have the ball dropping and everybody getting drunk and stumbling around, then at least the dog isn't right there. Same thing with fireworks. And we go through this many times throughout the year regarding New Year's and July 4th, where you have so many fireworks and they're not really predictable. It seems like people like to set these things off well ahead of the holiday and well after the holiday. That is not really conducive to having a well-intentioned dog who has, you know, perfect behavior around loud noises, because that can be scary. Let's face it, it can be very, very scary for even for a child who's never heard fireworks. A lot of kids get, you know, screaming and carrying on because they don't know what all the fireworks are. So certainly, I follow our show throughout the year, because we'll teach you how to basically set your dog up for success during the 4th of July and New Year's and everything. But one thing that you can start doing even now, you have a few days yet, is start getting on YouTube or on whatever social media, or if you have any little videos, get a little video. Either throw it on your TV, throw it on your phone, throw it on an endless loop on very, very low, not too loud, just very, very low, because what that's going to do is, by getting them used to it on a very, very low volume, they're going to get used to it in a safe place, in their home where they feel comfortable, in their crate where they feel comfortable, on their bed where they feel comfortable. And then every day, just crank it up just a tiny bit more so it's just a little louder. And you can just let it play. It doesn't have to be 24 hours a day, but play it for a little while. And you can even give your dog a special chew-ball phone or something, a toy or something that he likes, or give him cookies while it's going on. I don't normally do that with food, but you want to make sure that the dog associates the noise with something good happening so you can pet him. You can do all that. But if the dog gets afraid, if he seems to be skittish, if this noise is freaking him out, then drop the volume down much lower so it's barely audible. Once he gets used to that, you can start picking it up a little by little by little until eventually it's, you know, pretty loud. Then when he or she is ready for 4th of July, everything's happening and you've got fireworks, it's not going to be a big deal. And your dog might even come up to you and ask you for a pet or for a cookie. That's what we want. If you don't prepare on things like this, let me just tell you, make sure your dogs are inside or are leashed with something that they're not going to get away from, because I also get a lot of calls as a behaviorist, and I also track lost animals. That's how most of these animals go missing, is during fireworks or thunderstorms where the dog starts getting afraid. Even tasks we've done where the animal gets afraid and starts to run. And I've seen so many dogs slip out of harnesses, slip out of collars. So think before you go out. Make sure that your pet is comfortable with the noises, comfortable around you with the noises, and that if you do have to take the pup out, or if it's your kitty, just make sure that they're in a safe place where they're not going to be able to slip out of a leash or collar. Bad enough when it happens in the suburbs, but it's worse, much worse, when it happens in a city environment, because they get scared, they run across the street, they get scared, they run into an alley, nobody can find them. They, God forbid, get hit by a vehicle or even stolen. It's just crazy. So this is what's very important to do. Make sure you prepare, always prepare for the worst and hope for the best. We are going to be right back in a moment after a momentary break with talking about some other things with DNA and the magic of science. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Pet Savant Unleashed. Well, we're going to continue a little bit talking about DNA, as we started the hour with. Designer pups, you can DNA them. Just want to let you guys know that. And be careful when you are looking at a breed. What happens is, I always hear this, but Janet, I know that mixed breed dogs are healthier than purebred dogs. And big buzzer there. Not true. Some mutts are going to be more healthy because they're just general mixes of something. So in the olden days, before puppy mills and designer dogs, it was a status symbol to have a purebred dog, because it meant that you were looking for something and that, you know, you had the wherewithal and the intelligence to, you know, research your breed. And I didn't see a lot. When I was a kid, there weren't that many people relinquishing dogs. And if they were, the random, you know, German Shepherd or aggressive dog, and I don't mean that Shepherds are, but they can be very dominant. But we all have heard stories, and it's usually Shepherds or something like that, that came from a working line that somebody sold to a family, that maybe the dog wasn't raised properly or whatever. But unfortunately, the dog is always the one who pays the price. Well, we also have DNA now, which is great because we can DNA the parents. But you have to look at things. Like, for instance, there are things like juvenile cataracts. Now, juvenile cataracts are actually, just as they sound, they can actually lead to permanent complete blindness. Now, if you had somebody like our great surgeons up at Guardian, they can fix this, and really it's amazing what they're able to do, but they can do eye surgery, and basically, like, you would have cataract surgery on your eyes, they can do the same thing with dogs. So get yourself pet health insurance, because it's so important. Pet health insurance would cover something like that, provided it wasn't pre-existing. But the reason I say about, let's say, juvenile cataracts, golden retrievers are one of the most beautiful breeds, but they are the most unhealthy breed. There's something called the Golden Years Study, which is a pun on golden years and as you get older, but also golden retriever, the golden years. And the issue with goldens is they do have a lot of issues. They tend to have bad hips if they're not bred right. They tend to have thyroid issues and a lot of things like that, endocrine issues. They also tend to have juvenile cataracts, meaning they can actually get blind very young. They have seizures. There's a lot of things with them. And the good, if you want to get a golden or a mix of a golden and something, go to somebody who's very careful in what they breed, because there are wonderful breeders out there, show breeders who breed to better the breed, like I breed to better my breed. And because this happens, where people say, oh, I'm going to get a doodle, I'm going to get a poodle golden mix because it'll be healthier. Well, guess what? DNA-wise, guess what poodles are also susceptible to? Yeah, juvenile cataract. So let's just say you get this, and I'm sure it's not a grand champion poodle with a grand champion show dog golden. You're going to get whatever somebody either found on the street, bought at a pet store that was, you know, not a good quality to start with. Please never buy at pet stores. They are only there to make money. Seriously, there is no other reason they're there. Anybody who can sell an animal for money and never having met that person or caring about that person, knowing nothing about the puppy other than it came in yesterday, I'm going to mark it up $3,000 and charge you $5,000 for a puppy that's not even going to be healthy or it's going to have a bad temperament, you don't want to get started with that. But if you're getting a dog that has a high propensity towards having a particular genetic defect or issue, and it's being bred to another dog, even though it's a mixed breed, right, when it ends up, that dog has both expressions of both alleles, both mother and father, can give it juvenile cataracts, can give it thyroid issues, can give it all these different things that run in line. So it's different from the olden days when your grand champion, beautiful German Shepherd, mated with your friend's lab or golden, who was also well-bred, and they had, you know, great healthy puppies. The more random it is, oftentimes the better, but not always. And again, that gets into all the DNA testing. Yes, there's this amazing DNA testing out there, and I don't see why anybody wouldn't do that and expect that from your breeder. Now, it doesn't mean that your, you know, local breeder or your person who's breeding mixed breed designer dogs or who's breeding, you know, non-show line. And the reason I say that is show breeders care that their dogs look beautiful, act beautifully, have great temperament, great longevity, because they and health, because we want to make sure that you come back. I've had people who have bought, the one guy has had six of my Rhodesian Ridgeback over 40 years. He's had six. And you know what? When he get about seven or eight, he wants to get another one. And then let him have a puppy. He wound up with four at one time. There were like 15, 12, 9, you know, 7, and then he wanted the other puppy. And I said, no, no, no. Because I know that my stuff's going to live a long time. It's not unusual for me with my Ridgebacks to have dogs living 15, 16 years. And Ridgebacks don't typically live that long. I have actually one that's 17 and a half years old that's still alive from one of the litters that I had in the past, and that's pretty cool. So remember, DNA doesn't lie. So see, do the best you can. You can go on to Wyatt's List, Wyatt's List, WyattsBliss.com, and you'll get some great advice on, you know, all of that, you know, and hopefully all those great things that happen, you know. But the most important thing is to make sure that you have a healthy animal. Have a healthy animal that is going to be able to live long, not have a temperament issue, not bite somebody, and not have a lot of medical issues. So think about that next time you look for a puppy or a dog. Again, rescuing is great. Adopting is great. Fostering to adopt is the best. But if you do want a dog, you want to get a puppy, start out with quality. Start out with something that at least you know that person who bred that animal really cares about that animal. Here's another thing. Any breeder, quote-unquote, good or bad, who lets a puppy go out before 8 weeks of age or without at least its first shot is a backyard breeder garbage puppy mill. That's it. Any puppy you get should have at least its first shot, and they shouldn't have them when they're 5 weeks old. When I breed one of my females, I have already 2 to 6 months prior updated their vaccination so that they're going to pass on those antibodies to their puppies. I've already started them on folic acid, which helps to prevent birth defects. If any of you who have taken prenatal vitamins when you're pregnant, you know what I'm talking about. So it's important to have all that. It's also important for the female not to be under a great deal of stress, because stress can cause cortisol, and cortisol can actually cause congenital issues in an animal. If somebody's under a lot of stress, they have a higher propensity or higher chance of having genetic issues or congenital issues, because it's not so much the DNA, but it's the chemicals that are present during the pregnancy. This is why a lot of times when you hear somebody has, let's say, a puppy who was born under a trailer and the mother, you know, was this feral, you know, dog, and now they got a puppy, and the puppy not only has physical issues, but a lot of times they have really bad behavioral issues. And it's not that it was the DNA, but it was the stress during that time of gestation, which for a dog is 63 days. How about that? Anyone who's a mom, that's not even a full trimester for a human. 63 days and you're done. So just imagine if you have for 63 days, especially the first trimester for a dog, which is the first 3 weeks, is when everything is starting to form. The neural tubes, the brain, the eyes, everything starts forming early. That's why folic acid is so important. And that's where a lot of you guys, when you do rescue, those dogs have not, and not all of them, but a lot of them have not had the benefits of having a mother dog with perfect nutrition, having had her vaccinations, having had no stress, having had access to water and great food, things that are good for her. And that's where you get stuck with some of the people who are breeding for money with these designer dogs, or even quote-unquote purebred dogs from disreputable sources, such as we know in certain areas in Pennsylvania and Ohio. Not all of those people breed garbage, but a lot of them do, unfortunately. They want money, and that's what they do. They breed every heat cycle until the animal can no longer have puppies. That's the definition of a puppy mill. There are well-meaning people who have a purebred dog, and they say, oh, I'm going to breed a litter because I want my kids to see the joy of birth. Well, take your kids to a shelter, and I'm being facetious here, and have your kids see what happens when people breed garbage or don't stand behind their dogs or don't plan litters and make sure that they're healthy, that their temperament is good, that they're strong, that they're going to have great longevity. Take them to the shelter on euthanasia day. And every shelter, even the no-kill shelters, they'll have it for behavioral euthanasia, because a lot of times you need that if you have a dog that's unadoptable because it's aggressive or it has serious behavioral issues. Let your kids know. If you want to have another child, let your kids see the video, or just go onto YouTube and see a video of an animal giving birth. I've done videos of my animals, my pups, and even my horses giving birth. You can do that these days. You don't need to breed something and then have to dispose of 10 or 12 puppies. It's just not the right thing to do. It's not something good to teach your children that, you know, you just, oh, you know, get them and here you can make money. Because I've had people, and one I know very well, who called me and said, I want to breed because I want to make money breeding dogs. And I was mortified. So you have to be very, very careful. Make sure whoever it is has been breeding for at least 10 years, not their first litter. You know what? The puppies will find a place. It doesn't need to be in your home. Make sure that the person does genetic testing. Make sure that if it is a purebred dog, that they're members of the American Kennel Club or CKC or UKC, one of them, that at least recognizes standards for purebred dogs. Some of the AKC breeds weren't accepted years ago, and now they are. So each registry has something different. But not American Canine Registry, not these little knockoff things. Look it up, make sure these things are reputable, and if they are going to give you papers, and for goodness sake, I do have to tell you a funny one. There was a lady on one of the social media platforms who got a DNA test for her dog, and she was absolutely furious, and she posted on social media how disgusted she was with this terrible breeder who sold her a Labradoodle puppy, and she was disgusted because she did a DNA test and found out that one parent was a lab and the other parent was a poodle. And she was promised that this was a purebred Labradoodle. Purebred, like it exists. So, first of all, my question is, what idiot sold this woman a dog in the first place, if this is what she thinks? And second of all, why would this woman not research to know what a lab poodle is and what its temperament is, and the fact that it isn't purebred. It's not purebred at all. It's a mutt. And many breeds started out as mutts. They started out being bred, but eventually they get to a point where it's an actual breed. But a breed has standards, weight, height, length, size, standards of what it should look like, how the conformation is, what the temperament should be. So if you're not getting a purebred dog and you think that you're going to get a mixed breed dog and know what it's going to be like, you're not going to know what it's like because God doesn't know what it's going to be like. It is what it is. So anyway, there are DNA test kits available now to detect all kinds of genetic issues. That's something great. And then the other thing we discussed last week, foster to adopt. And you can even get all those DNA kits. You can get that done while you're fostering or ask the rescue to do it because many of the rescues, the really good rescues, will do that for you now. So you really do have an idea of what the breed is and what it might be. Now, the reason it becomes important, it's the same thing as with humans. Certain people and certain ethnicities of people have certain different health issues. Yes, we can say that's, you know, wrong, but it is true. Certain genders, right? If a man might have a thing that a woman isn't going to get, or a woman might get something a man isn't going to get. It's not that a man and a woman can't both of them get breast cancer, but it's so much of a higher chance of getting it if you're female. So if you were coming into this world and you didn't want to get breast cancer, and you came in as a man, you have a much lower chance of getting breast cancer as a man as a woman does. So that's what I'm talking about. And each of these things goes along with the breed. So if you're able to figure out what the breeds are, you'll have a better idea. Plus, these test kits are so amazing, they actually tell you what the dog is clear from. And when I got my Lexi done, there were 211 different genetic tests they did on her, and zero were a problem. So she was super healthy. But she also turned out to be Chihuahua, Cocker Spaniel, Dalmatian, Boxer, and half a dozen other things, including Super Mutt, which is a whole bunch of different things. And Lexi lived to 19 years old. She would have lived longer, but she was 19 years old. So her DNA, that was actually quite healthy because she was such an outcross of mixes of mixes of mixes. And she became, well, very lucky, very old, and you know, unfortunately isn't here now. But Lexi taught me an awful lot, as with every dog I've done for the last 40-plus years, that, you know, it matters. The DNA matters. You can say what you want, but it still comes down to the DNA. All right. Here's the next thing we're going to work on in a moment. Right after the break, we're going to talk about pet sitters and boarding, how to check them out. Because it's important when you're going on vacation that you know you're going somewhere and that your pet is home safe. We'll be right back with the Pet Savant Unleashed in a moment. And welcome back to Pet Savant Unleashed. All right, as promised, we are going to be talking about how to choose a good pet sitter or boarding facility. Now, of course, I board dogs for friends, but mostly it's for people either who've gotten pups from me or who are patients of mine, because I've seen horror stories, and I'm sure everybody heard, I'm not going to throw them under the bus, but one of the apps to get a dog sitter or a pet sitter or walker, just had a really horrible situation where their person, remember, they don't know these people. They don't check them out. They go by, you know, reviews. And unfortunately, this person, this man, pet sat for an aggressive dog. And the people apparently told him that their dog was not good with other dogs. He assured them and promised that the dog would be the only dog in his home. He would be extra careful. And they trusted him. Well, the world turns around a little bit. Here they go on vacation. They get a phone call, pick up your dead dog. Now, that sounds pretty horrible, but it's not that the dog passed of natural causes. This man killed the dog. And it's all over the news. I'm not going to go into the details, but he killed the dog. So clearly, this was not someone who loved animals. This was somebody who just got on the platform, and whether he had an argument with somebody or the dog did something, there is not any reason in a million years why anybody should harm, hit, yell at, or anything, any animal. If you can't handle it, then don't offer to help, and you're getting paid for it. So I'm interested to see how this is all going to work out, but it did bring a lot of people to me who have been very questioning of, you know, really just what is it that I should be looking for, right? Well, I have to go on vacation. I can't take my pet with me. How do I find a good pet sitter, Janet? You're the pet savant. Tell me. Well, best thing to do is think of your dogs like you used to think of your kids. You wouldn't just drop your dog off somewhere that you didn't know the people. You wouldn't drop the dog off somewhere where you didn't look at the facility. You wouldn't drop your child off there. You wouldn't send your kid off to camp without driving to the camp and making sure the counselors and everybody was nice and that they seemed to be safe and focused. You might even ask for referrals or references from people whose kids went there. Well, yeah, that's what we want to do here. Now, again, on whyitslist.com, you'll see a lot of information on that as far as what to do and how to find, like what questions to ask of a place or a person. But I really just want everybody to think of it. The best way to do this is how we did it in the old days, which is not relying on the internet, but relying on people you know. Almost all of the people who bring dogs to me or who come for behavioral issues with their animals, almost all of them are word of mouth, and that is the way to go. It doesn't mean that there'll be no issues, because certainly, like people who use shock collars, which I am just mortified that people use them because they're horrible. I don't care if somebody might say, oh, yeah, it works fine for my dog. Yeah, if you have a Rottweiler, maybe a Shepherd who's very dominant, maybe a dog who doesn't care. Yeah, maybe you'll get away with it. But you can't do that on many breeds, because each breed is different and each individual within that breed is different. So the best thing to do is to do, and I'm not going to say positive reinforcement, it's behavioral. Behaviorally, reinforce what you like. If your dog jumps on you and you pet him, guess what? You're teaching him to jump. If your dog jumps on you and you give him either a correction with your voice or a little touch on the side, which don't try that at home. You'll have to read one of my books or call me and I'll help you with that. But doing these things doesn't help a dog to be a better dog. It confuses them. And one thing you really need to have, and I use this word all the time, is clarity. If you're correcting the animal, but it doesn't understand the correction, for instance, you're zapping the dog because it jumps, it's not necessarily learning not to jump. It's learning to avoid people. Those dogs tend to have behavioral issues and fear issues later in life, especially if they're corrected during some of the fear phases, because the animal doesn't, not all animals are going to say, oh, yeah, I got corrected for jumping. They're going to go, people make give me pain. People make me hurt. People scare me because I don't know what they're going to do. And your animal starts becoming afraid. I've seen this over and over again. That's why I don't believe in shock collars and all these things, especially the remote things or squirting an animal. If the dog is chewing on something and you squirt him, so you squirt him and now he doesn't trust you. So was the chewing the issue, or now the fact that your dog doesn't trust you and he's going to become fearful or fear aggressive? See, this is what I'm saying. You're making more problems than you're fixing because you don't understand. You don't know what you don't know. If every pretty much maybe 90% of the people I deal with didn't know what they didn't know, meaning they thought it was a good idea. You know, it's like, hey, Mom, I thought it was a good idea to go get drunk and go drive my friends around. I thought it was a good idea. I'm 17. What do I know? Thinking is not always a good issue. As my assistant Amanda always says, thinking causes problems. Don't think something. Check it out, and don't just check it out online because, you know, the internet's full of, a range from people like me all the way down to, you know, a 14-year-old who's in Ohio in his room, you know, because he's got detention and he's failing out of school, and he decides he's going to give himself a cute name and he's going to tell everybody that he's a dog expert, and you don't know who it is. So really be careful. Go to somebody established, and not going to shock collar trainers, not going to anybody who uses aversives. You don't need to use aversives. Trust me, I work with dogs that you guys can't even imagine. Bad dogs, really bad dogs that have killed animals, have ripped muscle groups off of people. That's my population, all the way down to separation anxiety and things like that. So when I tell you these things, I'm telling you from 45 years of experience, okay? I've done this. I've trained service dogs, 1,300-plus service dogs, 30,000-plus dogs that I've rehabilitated. And I'm telling you, don't start out with something because you thought it was a good idea. Find out from an expert. You can call us. Listen, you can email me at K9 behaviorist, behaviorists, at gmail.com. You can email me at k9behaviorists@gmail.com. You can call 855-449-9288, and we will answer and try to help you. You can reach out to the network. They'll get the information to me, and you can also send in some questions. But for goodness sake, please don't do things because you think it's a good idea. More people have gotten hurt or killed because they thought something was a good idea. Make sure you know that it's good, that you're talking to somebody reputable. Even if you're starting with a local dog trainer and the dog trainer says, whoa, you know, I can't do this. I don't know how to handle that. That's a behavioral issue. That's a good trainer because they know their limits. And a lot of really good dog trainers out there. The problem is there are also a lot of them who don't know their own limitations. They don't want to lose a client. So they stick with it too long, cost you a lot of money, and maybe cause problems in the mid. But at least start with somebody who you've seen over and over, somebody who doesn't use aversives, who's not rough and, you know, ready to, you know, hurt or intimidate the dog. So we are going to very quickly talk about our Q&A, new dog, new puppy intro to family, what not to do. So if you are lucky enough to have just gotten a puppy, or a dog, and this goes really with cats too, but mostly today is about the dogs. Don't overwhelm the animal. When you get a puppy or a dog home, don't bring every friend you've ever had since the third grade over to meet the dog. Don't drag it around to 10 different stores the first day. You have to wait at least 2 weeks, and that's just a bare minimum, not 1 week, 2 weeks, because it's really a couple of months. 2 months is the honeymoon period, but 2 weeks teaches that dog what you're expecting of him. You've got to get that dog used to housebreaking, used to all those things that you want consistency. And if you don't do this and you rush out, you're setting that dog up to fail. The dog, first of all, isn't going to know who to bond to. But more importantly, the dog isn't trusting of you guys yet because it doesn't know you. So after that third day, after you've gotten the pup or the dog, you're going to see a difference where the dog is going to start really bonding and looking for you and starting to trust you. That's why it's so important not to yelp, not to scream, not to get angry, not to be yelling on your work phone when you're in the room with the dog, because the animal doesn't know if you're yelling at him or you're just a crazy person, all right? It's very important. Yes, the dog knows if you're not facing it, but he's still hearing that, and that is not helping him. So don't overwhelm your dog. Second thing is get on a schedule, whether it's feeding, whether it's taking the dog out to the potty for potty breaks, whatever it is, get on a schedule and stick to that schedule as much as you can. The third thing is get your pup on good nutrition. No corn, no wheat, no soy, no BHA, BHT, or byproducts. Make sure there's no additives like propylene glycol in their treats. Make sure you're looking at it that you have a good quality food. And if the dog comes with food, you can continue that food on, and then within a week or two, you can get your new food and transition them. If the dog has been doing well, you can keep the same source of protein. If the dog is not doing well and has allergies or anything, not a bad idea to visit your vet. A lot of times the stress of going to a new environment can also cause symptoms that appear to be allergy related. So be careful with that. And the last thing, slow and steady. God willing, you're going to have this animal for years. Slow and steady. Don't do everything at once. Don't overwhelm the dog. Don't make him feel like he's doing wrong things just because you expect it to be done in a day and he needs a month. Give him a break. Think of yourself in your whatever class you had in school that was very difficult, and now, you know, everybody's pushing you. No, you got to do this quick, 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 quick. All that happens, you get stressed, and you're going to be unsuccessful. We want to set your dog up for success, not for failure. So don't overwhelm them. Get them on a schedule, good nutrition, slow and steady. That's it for today on the Pet Savant Unleashed. Have a great holiday.